Yeah, I would just second the chair's request in terms of, it'd be nice to see the profile for commercial and the profile for individual, because you mentioned commercial quite a bit in here, but not so much the other. Be interesting to see that. And as I look at commercial, they say after about a year, it's at about 25%. So the question I would have is it due process that dictates that we wait that long? Because obviously at a year, it's 1 in 4 chances, and then after that it gets even worse. So what is the typical problem in terms of that relatively low success rate, and what is due process, what drives us? Is there a way to move faster on the commercial end of things?
So just to be clear, I think these rates are industry average rates, right?
They are industry average.
So
industry.
These aren't just ours, but these are industry average rates, just to give you some sense. So that's to be clear, but we can certainly get the breakout. We do try to give, you know, it's always a balance between, you know, sending things to collections right away or giving customers every opportunity to pay the tollway directly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even the collection agencies, we ask them to have a process before they take accounts, you know, actually to court or pursue accounts in court. But
work on getting that breakout. One of the difficulties we have looked at this, one of the difficulties we've had in the past is it's not always readily apparent what an individual account is versus a commercial account. But we still should be able to give you a sense, an estimate of what that breakout is.
So maybe we can do this in your and Director Reddick's committee and have a more of a drill down. And just a reminder that at the point that we turn it over to the collections people, they are the ones that are taking the financial risk, right? So they're the ones that either recruit the
fees. They're paid out of what is collected, right? So we're not necessarily paying them if they're not collecting.
Right. So the extended period of time in some way isn't a liability for the tollway, even though we would like to be as successful as possible in doing the collections.
I would just put one more thing out there. Part of the up to 3 notices that we send is part of that collectability curve. So it's not as if we wait until collections. We are actively collecting within, you know, weeks of their violations. So first notice, second notice.
I think it'd be useful. So we'll go back and do a little deeper dive on this and provide some, you know, information about how much, you know, who is at what stage and how much is at what stage, and kind of get into it a little bit more. Thoroughly. I know when we decided to pursue commercial accounts in court, you know, it's certainly, we can take a look at how successful that effort has been and dive a little deeper in it. So, but it's a nice overview. Thanks, Mike. Now we have a presentation on our expanding access to IPAS update. This is the IPAS sale that we launched starting October 1st. We're very excited to give you this update. I mentioned some numbers at the committee meeting last week, but we've seen even more success in the week that followed the committee meeting. You know, I really think that when you hear these numbers, you may be as surprised as we are at how many people are taking advantage of these offers. And I think it's a real indication of the price sensitivity that people have when it comes to IPAS. They get a great benefit once they have an IPAS because it's half the price. You know, they get a reduced rate for tolls, but ultimately, you know, price sensitivity even on the front end of the project. So we do plan that once the sale is over at the end of the year to do some surveying of the customers who took advantage of the sale and get a sense of why, so that we can come back to the board in January or February with, you know, a full amount of information and detail and decide how to proceed. So, Shauna, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm very happy to be presenting this topic and that Mike took the drearier topic of collections because this has a much happier story. This is about people participating in IPAS and avoiding violations, avoiding that entire world of collections. There are a few slides here that I just wanted to harken back to from previous meetings that we've had together to remind everybody about how this came up and how this came into being. We are about to open one of the bigger all-electronic tolling interchanges on our system. And we do have, system-wide, about an 87% IPAS transaction rate. And we do have above average IPAS penetration in the Chicago Southland communities where this interchange will be opening. But we want to make sure that things are as easy as possible for the people that live there and everyone who will be using the interchange. This is just a reminder slide of the interchange. And then I wanted to remind everybody about kind of what we had talked about in the last several months about what we could do to make to get this interchange launched very successfully. So I'm going to give an update on the IPAS sale and on our temporary customer service center in Midlothian. But there were other things here that I've grayed out that we did talk about. The IPAS Roadshow, where we had several events to introduce people to the IPAS program, answer questions, sell transponders. We did extensive outreach and information dissemination, a lot of advertising. And what led us to the report that I'm giving today, the kind of results report, is a focus group that was devoted to talking about signage, but also to talking about the IPAS program. Because in that focus group, people said, IPAS is kind of expensive. And we said, tell us more. And they said, it ties up a lot of dollars. What if I don't use the tollway that much? So this is the typical IPAS, this is the typical cost structure. People put down about $10 for a deposit if they have a credit card on the account. When they get a transponder, there's a $10 deposit for that transponder. Or if they are manually replenishing their account, meaning it's not automatically debited from their credit card, they'll put down a $20 deposit for the transponders. They open an account with $40 prepaid balance for tolls. That $40 all goes to tolls. And then the auto replenishment that does kick in if they have a credit card on the account is in $40 increments. And that's what everybody said was, in the focus group, more expensive than they cared to participate in. So we said, well, what about an IPAS sale? What can we do to make this cost structure, and it's been a long time since we've revisited it. We've had open road tolling a long time, so maybe it's time to look at this again. And we said, okay, let's give this a try. October 1st through December 31st. Let's talk about the deposits for the transponders first. Let's think about reducing, let's make all the deposits $10. Get rid of the differential, the 10 and 20, if you have the credit card on the account or not. Instead of that $40 prepaid balance, let's make it 20. And for those auto replenishment increments, instead of 40, let's make them 20. And what we did was we had about 500,000 customers who had manually replenished accounts that had those $20 deposits. And we changed those deposits to $10 and put the balance of the $10, the other $10, right towards their toll balance. And then we said that any existing customers who wish to reduce their auto replenishment increments from 40 to 20 were welcome to call us, and we would do that for them.
So just maybe pause. That changing from the deposit to the accounts seems like a very potentially complicated and dangerous thing to do because a lot of mistakes can be made. And at the beginning of automatic tolling, I think we had a lot of complaints about things that were done wrong in the system, and people who shouldn't have been getting bills were getting bills. It feels as if this went without a hitch. I don't want to...
We have run the data every way to Sunday, and whenever there's been a question, we've decided on the side of the customer. But we really have learned a tremendous amount, as has our system vendor. And we think it went relatively smoothly.
Well, I think we, as directors, would have heard about it if it hadn't, right, the way...
We would have, too.
Yeah, we would have, too. So congratulations.
I mean, that being said, if anybody does hear something like that, let me know immediately so that we can look at it, research it, deal with it, address it.
We would encourage any customer that sees anything,
yes.
Or, you know, obviously we're looking, we're proactive as well, but any customer that sees anything, as always... You know, call. You can certainly call the customer service number. They can call here to headquarters, and we'll, you know, work to resolve it right away. This is a system that, as you know, is sometimes difficult to make changes
right.
in. But if we let that immobilize us and keep us from doing what we think are important things and taking on important initiatives, I think we'd be making a mistake. So
it's a massive number of transactions.
It is. Yeah, it is. So
good work so far.
Well, we had a great team working kind of around the clock on this, both Tollway and our system team, our ETC vendors. So it's been I think it's been pretty well executed from that perspective. So here are some happy results. The IPASS sale has more or less doubled the number of new accounts that we're seeing created every day. We typically have about 350 accounts created every day. We're seeing 650 accounts created every day right now, 450 of which are participating in the sale on average. I mean, I'm kind of rounding. But this graph here, you can see that those big spikes, which actually continue, that's October 1st. That's when it started. And the interesting thing is it's increased the number of people opening new accounts, even if they're not participating in the sale. It's kind of just opened a new door for people to walk through. They hear about us, they're reminded, and they want to be part of the program. So to date, we've had about 9,000, and this is a moving target, so we'll continue to update you, and then at the end we'll have kind of a solid final number. But we have about 9,000 new accounts that have participated in the sale, and then in total about close to 13,000 accounts that are new just since October 1st. And then with respect to auto replenishment, we have had a number of people call in to request moving from the $40 to the $20. So from the existing IPASS customer universe, we've had 26,000 people call in and say, I'd prefer $20 for an auto replenishment increment. And then once you add the number of people who are opening new accounts by participating in the sale, that number overall goes to 35,000 customers who are asking for the $20 auto replenishment increment.
So I think that when I updated the board last week, our total number was 17,000 compared to the 35,000.
Yes.
So you can see that it's even just within the last week, how much activity we've seen of people interested in these lower amounts, whether it's from, you know, changing their existing accounts or opening new accounts. It really has been a great reaction.
It has. And then related to this, to make IPASS more accessible, especially in the area where the new interchange is opening, I did want to just let everybody know how things are going at the Midlothian Temporary Customer Service location. This is at one of the DMVs, the Secretary of State's location. And starting on September 2nd, we've had a presence there. Tuesday through Friday. So we have full service offered there Tuesday through Friday. And we have a nice little setup. You'll see a photo of it in a moment. And it's been going pretty well. We've had about 950 visitors there since September 2nd. We've had approximately 200 new IPASS accounts opened at that location. People who are existing IPASS customers, about 115 of them, have come and added transponders to their account. And then we have about 140 people walking in to manually replenish their accounts. So they do not have a credit card on their account, and then they just occasionally either give us cash in person, send in a check, or call in using a gift card, whatever it might be. They manually replenish their account. 140 of them came here to do it in person. So I think overall this is it's a pretty good story that when we listen to folks in a focus group, we sometimes get some good guidance. And we've been able to make a real difference in just the last few weeks.
Questions on this?
Shauna, with the success of the program and more people participating and existing customers that have dropped down to that $20 threshold, I am assuming we're seeing an increase in the amount of credit card transactions then, or the number of times that we're going through transactions?
We are seeing a slight increase that doesn't really impact our costs. Before we did this, we looked at the costs. We pay mostly just based on the percentage of dollars that are charged. So that percentage of dollars is the same.
So, and I think the other point is that I think a lot of people who are taking advantage of that lower amount are less frequent users often. So they were in the situation where they just had $40 sitting there, which was part of the feedback we got from the focus groups, that they didn't like, people didn't like that, particularly if they felt they were not frequent users and it would take them a year to use up all that money. They'd, you know, rather have it in their accounts to do other things with that money. So, But it'll be interesting once everything's said and done here for us to not only do the survey, but look at all the numbers and the data and just, you know, kind of present the full picture to the board, and we can decide what to do to...
And just as we sign these people up, or people choose to become members of the program, how are we informing them or making sure that they're aware that this is a... The current program, as it said, is just until the 31st of December, and that effective 1-1, as it's set out, it would skip and they'd go to the, you know, be on the regular program as it's established.
Well, they would. These are permanent changes, right? If people are taking advantage of the sale, it's not like they'll go back to $40 auto replacement.
Oh, they're not. Oh.
So, you know, this permanent. Is in permanent going forward, but. New accounts that would open, unless we make some change after January 1, wouldn't necessarily be able to open with these at these levels.
Okay.
So that's something you will probably want to look at in your committee. Mm-hmm.
I said to Chrissy, I think this is such a great public management case study if anybody wants to teach it. Yeah, I mean, the board was actually looking at the question of signage and said, why don't we do some focus groups? The focus groups came up with this issue, and then you see this kind of impact. And I suppose we were talking yesterday that maybe it's also a marketing case study as well. What does it mean to call something a sale? And what, how does that actually activate people's behavior? I have no expertise in that field at all, but it's really fascinating. Thank you.
And thank you, Shauna, and your team and everybody who's worked so hard between communications and business systems to publicize this program, but also make the necessary changes in the system to accommodate it. So I know you've got a lot on your plate. Thank you. Last but not least, there were some questions asked last week at the Finance Administration Operations Committee about an item that we had on the agenda, and that is the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly and our intergovernmental agreement with the University of South Dakota. So there were some questions, as I mentioned, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to update everybody on our efforts regarding this endangered, fair to say, protected,
federally endangered
species. I don't want to call it an insect if that somehow is disparaging, but the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly and the study and the work that we've been doing on this for the last several years.
So Christy gave you a wonderful introduction there. That was my first page of notes that I had. And I did want to tell you that I'm proud and excited that I get to present this. This dragonfly has attracted and captured a lot of people's imagination. And although it's small, it does represent a significant aspect of our road building work. So here's a picture of it. You see how it is. This is a Heinz Emerald Dragonfly, Saumatra chlora hennii. I did bring my technical expert from our environmental group, Brian Wagner, here. He knows all about this. So if we have questions, we can talk about that. These little guys live 4 years, and the last 6 years they spend in the state that you see here. It's the adult state. And Brian helped me prepare this presentation, and I wanted to tell you, I mean, we have lots of standards and criteria and specifications pertaining to road building. What did not exist was those same types of protocols for rebuilding a habitat for this federally endangered species. The tollways relationship with the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly was initiated as part of our regulatory permit requirements for building the south extension of I-355. And per today's addendum to our agreement, we're hoping to get final approval to complete our efforts and at the same time establish a long-term, sustainable, and captive rearing program for the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly. This is a nice picture here of the preeminent expert in this field. It's Dr. Dan Solak of the University of South Dakota. He's at the site known as the Fish Farm. It's in DuPage County Forest Preserve, Waterfall Glen, if you've ever been there. It's very beautiful. I've been there myself. This fish farm has been and will continue to be the primary Heinz research location in Illinois. And in this photo, Dr. Solak is monitoring a created habitat area for the adult Heinz Emerald Dragonfly. That's what the created habitat looks like. Today's addendum, as I mentioned, is going to allow the University of South Dakota and Dr. Solek to continue to develop the necessary protocols that we want to have in place for restoring degraded habitat and constructing new larval habitat. It's a very interesting picture here. Demonstrates the first 4 years of this little creature's life. You see the little spot there and how each year they get a little bit bigger. Additionally, this university and Dr. Solek will develop captive rearing procedures and behavioral studies that are going to refine the procedures that they have so developed so far. They've been very successful in rearing these small creatures and creating additional populations. But what they're going to focus on this addendum is like try to do it on a mass basis and try to make it less labor intensive and more efficient. You see in this photo here, it gives you an example of how labor intensive it can be. They have individual containers for each one of these. They have to be hand fed. So we know that we're meeting the minimum criteria of our permit requirements, and we're exceeding those requirements that we have. We are going to be able to develop this mass rearing program, as I mentioned. This effort is going to help us finalize the protocols that we've established to make it a more efficient and more efficient captive rearing program. It's going to complete our work in a manner that's going to be, it's going to make it most useful to others in the future. And I think it's a great example of how the tollway approaches its work, how we build partnerships with our regulatory partners, our regulatory agencies, who are providing matching funds also, just like we're contributing funds in this addendum to the agreement, and it demonstrates our commitment to sustainability and the environment. So if there
are
any...
Do you want to click to the last slide?
No. I forgot. That's the... This is not Photoshop. This is how the little guy looks when you take a picture of him head on. And I know that Mike Stone is very scared of this picture, so he won't
smiling?
Looks
like
it.
Two questions. I never was quite clear on what is the typical lifespan.
So it's 4 years, 4 years and 6 weeks. And the last 6 weeks, it spends as how we see it in this picture, an adult flying dragonfly.
And so, is the last 6 weeks have something to do with in the becoming much more colorful, etc.? Does that have to do with regeneration or
breeding?
Breeding, maybe.
All right. I am going to default to Brian if he knows the answer to that.
So the last 6 weeks is just the adult phase. So the first 4 years is what they consider a larval phase, where they live in crayfish burrows. They have a final molt where they turn into the adult dragonfly, which you see here and is on wing. And this is primarily, the 6 weeks of their life is primarily dedicated to finding a partner, mating, and prolonging the species.
The other question I had, how did we originally get involved in this?
So it was an aspect of our regulatory permit requirements when we initiated our work on the 355 South Extension. We were impacting the habitat, and this habitat doesn't exist in many places. In fact, I think this Des Plaines River Valley is one of only a few locations in the whole country where this species actually lives and exists.
So was that something that the federal government had already identified, or is this a situation where environmentalists, when they understood that we were going to be doing work out there, brought this to our attention?
So I, and Brian can add on to this, I know that every project that we do, there is an environmental screening process that goes along with that up front, and I believe that is when we identified that this species did exist within the limits of our planned improvement.
So it had been cataloged, it had been identified as endangered, and then the screen showed us that we had to create some standards and activities around it.
Correct. It was, pardon me, and is placed on the federally endangered species list in the early mid-90s. So early planning efforts as part of 355 didn't necessarily incorporate it, but once we started progressing a little bit further along and it was listed, it was heightened there or brought to our attention. So it was known that the species existed there, and through the EIS process it was identified. Formal processes, we worked with the Fish and Wildlife and the Corps of Engineers as biological opinion and assessment that's established, and mitigative efforts, avoidance and mitigative efforts are established in those processes. So at the end of this year, we have met our formal commitments as part of the biological opinion that's issued by Fish and Wildlife, and this effort for next year will expand on that and is really intended, as Paul pointed out, to establish a sustainable effort for others to utilize for further propagation of them.
Thank you. So that's everything. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Pines Emerald Dragonfly. But, you know, an important part of what we do to try to protect the environment. Both what we're required to do, but I do think that COLA is very proactive in trying to find ways to protect the environment on our projects. It's, you know, a priority that's been set by the board and obviously very important to the governor. So thanks for the update. And I guess that'll teach you to, if you didn't like it, that'll teach you to ask questions about the Pines Emerald Dragonfly. So anyway, that's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Unless there's something else, we'll turn to the consent agenda. And as I always mention, and as obvious from Director Peterson's report, these have been reviewed in detail at the committee level, obviously by the staff in advance of that. So we do. It does feel as if we're whipping through them, but they have been reviewed. So let's start with, bless you, finance. We have two items there, items one and two. This is the tentative budget approval. Obviously, the final approval will be in December. May I hear a motion on those?
Motion approved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No recusals or abstentions, as far as I know. And I should have asked. No questions, I assume. Procurement, we have one item. Any questions on that one? Let's do a motion then.
Move to approve.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any recusals or abstentions? On business systems, we have the one item, the renewal of the contract to 8S McKinley. Questions on that? May I hear a motion, please?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? No recusals or abstentions. Engineering, at the time that the committee met, the consultant's proposals for items one and two were finalized, and they've since come in, I guess, lower than expected. So the board book items levels are the ones that we will be voting on today, and Paul will address these now as we entertain items one and two.
Yes, are you?
I think the board books may reflect still what was publicly posted, right?
And
the meeting agenda, so I'm sorry if there's, right, if there's confusion on that, but we'll be talking about what the new numbers are, and they are lower, so I think we're in good shape to discuss this.
Okay. I want to state that for the record, item one is now $1,815,201.60.
So that's correct.
That's,
I think,
correct.
That's different from the first version that went out, right?
It may have been, it was lowered with respect to our discussion at the FAO committee meeting. And then item two, the final proposal is actually $10,000 less than what was discussed at the FAO committee meeting. So I want to correct that amount to $1,982,842.40.
982?
982. 82. Yes. So the agenda I'm looking at right here on the screen says 983.
So it's 1,000.
1,000 from what's in the agenda, 10,000 from what was
okay.
At FAO, but all of it in the dollar direction.
Okay. Are there any questions about those two? Okay. And then 3 and 4 are the same as they were.
Yes.
And 5, we pulled that one.
Yes, I want to ask you.
that kind of be pulled, and probably we'll bring it back to the board next month.
Okay. 6, 7, 8, 9 are the same, and we have no refusals there, so we can take all of those together, and then 10 and 11 are not on the consent agenda. We can take those up in executive committee.
Right.
So it feels as if we could do 1 through 4.
That's
okay. Oh, there is a refusal on 2. I apologize. So let's take 1 alone. And your motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? No refusals for abstentions. And number 2, I'm sorry, Director Peterson is going to recuse himself. So may I hear a motion on 2?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And the 1 refusal, any abstentions? And then 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and 9, we can take all together. May I hear a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposition? No refusals or abstentions. And 10 and 11 we will take up in the executive session. And in legal, all of them are on the consent agenda, including 10 and 11, which were discussed at the executive session at the FAO committee, unless anybody would like to deal with those separately. Those were a workers' compensation settlement and a litigation settlement. Happy to take those in executive session. Does anybody want to deal with those in executive session? You've all seen the backup and the amounts. No? So why don't we just go ahead and we'll take... then we'll take 1 through 11.
We get a recusal.
We get a recusal on 4.
On 4.
Oh, on 4. I'm sorry. Okay. I apologize. So 1 through 3 we'll take.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Recusals or extensions? Number 4, we have a recusal for Director Reddick. May I hear a motion?
Motion approved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No abstentions and 1 Director Reddick recusals, and then we'll do 4 through 11.
5 through 11.
Somebody's got to get my brains out in this one. We have a recusal on 12. So may I hear a motion of 5 through 11?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No recusals or abstentions, and then 12. Director Garcia has a recusal, so let's take a motion on 12.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions, 1 recusal. And that finishes the consent agenda. Unfinished business? New business? No? Okay. So what we will do is take a motion to move into executive session. And David, you'll read us our...
Yeah, please. If we could have a motion pursuant to exceptions in the Illinois Open Meetings Act, specifically Section 2C5 to discuss real property acquisition, 2C7 to discuss sale of securities for the tollway, and 2C11 to discuss the tollway litigation matters.
I think we want to add personnel.
2C2 to discuss personnel. 2C1, excuse me.
2C1, okay. Thank
so
you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay. Everybody have a wonderful Halloween. Thank you very much for coming. And we will take a 5 to 10 minute break. Or
I just want to let you thank you for coming. We were about to adjourn, so we will have a motion to adjourn after you're finished, so we would appreciate it.
I really appreciate you guys.
Here.
Make me feel honored. Thank you.
You can go back and look at the tape. We're all sitting here looking happily waiting for you.
Yeah.
So if you would like to go up to the podium, yeah. And as you know, there's a camera over here and we're being recorded. Thank you. Could you introduce yourself?
Bob Israel, President of the Neighbor Community Coalition. I think I spoke up here about 2 years ago. Me and Omar, Dr. Elliott came, and actually what made me come again, first of all, I want to thank Dr. Stavro. He came and met with some African-American contractors in the community, came and met, so that's one reason I want to come and thank him for taking time out of his busy schedule and hearing concerns of the community. Second thing I want to talk about, y'all looking at the debate, and the debate, Ron is governor, I know everybody was governor, right? Ron and governor was talking, and I think he said like X amount of billions of dollars went through the state, and that's American money, got like 25 million. So I know probably Ron didn't do that almost. I think he's talking about I-Dot, almost talking about tollways, but I'm just trying to kind of, in some way, put a program together or something to make it more important. inclusively applicant and contractors. And then we can set out the process, workers and contractors, and trying to focus on contractors, not because of applicant and contractors, because contract either bring workers and not connected workers. Instead of trying to get applicant and workers to work with a contractor that probably already got his budget set, working with his friend. I mean, you know how it goes, so I'm not trying to be a thorn in anybody's side of that. And I was just trying to find out how we trying to get the numbers up. I think it's like 1% on the state. I think somebody said they're going to try to get up to 15%. So I ain't trying to hold you guys up. I just want to know what can we do to try to get the numbers up. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I could comment first. Since my time here on the board, we've been pretty active in increasing the budget for diversity. And just the budget that we're coming off of in 2014, we saw the budget actually go up by 100%. And in this year's tentative budget in 2015, we're actually increasing that department by another 29%. I believe it calls for another $300,000 in consulting services to do outreach into the communities for more DBE. Also, $135,000 in management software to make sure that we could keep a track of what the DBEs, the percents that they're actually doing, so we could streamline it, because there's a lot of paperwork that goes back and forth. But, you know, we sit here and we're looking at the goals that we put out on each individual contract. I'm very pleased in seeing that we're meeting those DBE goals since my time here on the board. And just to see that we're putting more and more into the department that Gustavo heads up, is we understand that there's going to be a lot more in 2015 when it comes to capital work versus 2014. So I like when I see that budget is being increased by 29%, so we can be out there in the communities that are African American, Latino, Caucasian women, all the DBEs and EMEs.
Yeah, he did mention that. He said last year, or I'd say this year, 2014, we had like a nice proportion. I think next year going to be even bigger. And I think he had a consultant with him, but I think that consultant was Tony Head somewhere. I'm trying to find out. We can recommend some consultants from the community of Chicago, not the community of Chicago, to see how we can just get involved with the process. So with outreach, recommend contracting.
Well, yeah, our consultants need to be selected competitively. So the consultant that we have currently in diversity does a lot of monitoring work, goes out and does site visits for us, and that was a competitive process. So we would need to get some type of proposal once we do a competitive, put out a competitive bid. You know, I would encourage, I know we've had a couple of conversations and have attended events, and I think we're very sympathetic to the points that you're raising in this board, and the leadership here and even the governor are very sympathetic to it. Yeah. So I think we want to continue to work with you. I see this as a, unfortunately maybe, but I think we have to approach it as a long distance process. But we are trying to commit extra resources to not only outreach but even technical assistance programs, and have tried to select partners that can target you know, companies that could do work for the tollway but maybe need some extra support or to better understand the bidding process. I mean, as you know from your experience, it's complicated to do work with governments.
Yeah, some of my contracts I know are challenges. Technical assistance would be great.
So technical assistance. And then I do think that there are going to be some additional opportunities in some untraditional areas for the tollway. So we are rebuilding maintenance sites and doing more kind of buildings and vertical construction. A lot of our previous efforts have been more heavy highway construction, and I think there will be, you know, from the groups that I know who exist, there are potentially a lot more, you know, there's a lot more availability or additional African-American, Hispanic, and other contractors who haven't worked with the tollway before who might find opportunities as we're building more buildings and vertical construction that didn't exist before. And I think we actually have on some of our building projects, I think the first general contractor, the BOA group, that's an African-American contractor there as a general contractor. So we're trying to make some progress. I think everybody would like to see us improve, which is why the board has tentatively approved is additional funding for diversity, but I just would say, on my behalf and everybody here, let's continue to work with you to make sure we can see some success.
Me and
For construction.
Correct. He said going good with professional service, but I was going to have to duplicate that on the construction side and move forward.
Let's continue to look at that. Gustavo and I were having a conversation about that as recently as just earlier this week. So it's, you know, there's some additional, issues that we would have to work through, but let's continue to work on it.
Well, we appreciate your coming. We always like to hear your concerns.
Okay.
And, you know, we know that Christy and her team are working on this, but that's what a board is here for, is to, you know, ask the questions.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll have to get it from you all.
Okay. Thank you, guys. We look forward to very closely with you.
Thank you very much. Now I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Thank you. See you next month.
Thanks.
Okay.